says, press watch at counter propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Won't you join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know? Happy New Year! I hope you're having a good day. I'm having a pretty good day. I came into the studio, and have you ever had one of those influenzas where you think you're over it, and then bam? Well, the bam was just before the mic opened. And so today, I am going to do this show, Press Watch, News You're Not Supposed to Know, from the chair, which is unusual. Influenza, by the way, serious business, and it's strange the attitude the society has towards it, because we all hear, oh, it's just the flu, or don't just take off work for just the flu or something like that. I mean, you get contradictory messages. You also get people telling you, take off work so you don't make everyone sick. But then you're penalized if you do. I mean, either way, you got trouble. And the Centers for Disease Control, last I checked, had tracked 9 kids that had died from the flu in this season. Flu is happening. And Press Watch is happening, and at the end of the year, and I usually scoff at the end of the year news show because there's so many of them. But I'm going to do one this year. Not quite exactly the same format. I've got some fresh headlines that I'll be laying on you. But I want to talk about, among other things, I want to talk about news you're not supposed to know over the past year or so. And I'm wondering what you think, what stories are not getting enough coverage. It's negative 36 degrees Fahrenheit, or was last night, in International Falls, Minnesota. And this is because if you look at the global projection of jet stream patterns, they're distorted like a drunk's tracks. And you can see the polar air just going right over Minnesota. A horrific condition, negative 36 Fahrenheit, extremely dangerous. And that air needs to be up on the North Pole, freezing the seawater, so that the Earth's ecosystems can maintain their balance. It isn't happening. We're in advanced capitalism now, and the planet is failing. So I want to talk about which stories of 2017 deserve more coverage. I'll go over a selection of my own. Given the rise of the fascist right, the execrable tax bill, the ongoing gerrymandering, poll closures, vote switching, the stuffing of the judiciary with corporate shills, something that's going to last for, well, the rest of their lives, the accelerated fascistization of fatherland security, what is the best road to revolution? I'm not thinking of reform. Reform can be a wonderful thing. I don't resist reform when it happens, but my aim is revolution. And I would like to ask you, are you thinking of resisting in your way of resisting from self-imposed exile? Because I think I'm probably not the only person who realizes that the writing is on the wall and things have gotten completely out of hand. That would also be an admission that, I'm getting older. There are only certain things I can still do. And being a young active revolutionary probably isn't one of them. So things get worse and worse. I might want to go somewhere else, although I want to keep doing this. And, thanks to the wonderful 21st century connectivity, I could. What are you thinking? Now, this 25th of December was the best Press Watch Christmas ever because of the big, beautiful package of horse manure delivered to Treasury Secretary Steve Moneybags Mnuchin, and because of the video of a feminine activist running with her shirt off, snatching the baby Jesus statue out of the Vatican Nativity display as she shouted, "God is a woman." Never have I had such a hoot on Consumergasm Day, so my imaginary hat's off to 2017 activists and activism. As Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink, points out, quote, "The year has seen an explosion of grassroots organizing, protest, and activism. An active and uncompromising spirit of revolt has blossomed into the face of a frightening political climate. During Donald Trump's presidency on January 21st, 2 million people took to the streets and women's marches across the world as a show of solidarity against Trump's violent, misogynistic rhetoric. On January 29th, thousands gathered in airports around the country to protest Trump's xenophobic and unconstitutional Muslim ban in April. 200,000 people joined the People's Climate March to stand up to the administration's reckless stance on climate in July. Disability rights activists staged countless actions on Capitol Hill in response to the GOP's cruel and life-threatening health care bill. In November and December, Dreamers, protected by Obama's provision called Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, stormed the Hill to demand a replacement for that program, which Trump ended in September. New groups like Indivisible have helped millions of Americans confront their members of Congress, roughly, and that's capital I, Indivisible. Roughly 24,000 people, she writes, joined the Democratic Socialists of America, and organizations like the ACLU and Planned Parenthood have seen massive surges in donations, end quotes. And again, that was Medea Benjamin's writing. And that was in Counterpunch. So you may want to pull that up, counterpunch.org, which is one of the sites that will now be challenged. It'll be subtle. It'll be slow. At some point, you realize just how screwed you are by the loss of net neutrality. Another story of 2017. I want to ask for something directly. We here at KBOO depend on your donations. It's the end of the year. Depending on your condition, economic condition, your situation, your circumstances, you may find this a good time to donate to KBOO. It's really easy to do. Just call us or pull up KBOO.fm. Because why give that money to the discretion of the Trump federal government? Don't get me wrong, government's doing a lot of good things still, but it's utterly corrupt, isn't it? So I would like to talk about some of the stories which have not been well covered. And unfortunately, for a handy resource, I have Project Censored, projectcensored.org, all one word, .org, projectcensored.org. And we often have them here on KBOO, but I want to talk about some of these stories because Project Censored is an essential resource, not just for the show, but for the United States, and I hope that you will become aware of it. One of the stories that they put in their 2017 top Project Censored, top censored stories is about guidelines that can actually reduce police killings. Killings by police, they write, are not inevitable or difficult to prevent, according to a September 2016 study by Campaign Zero, a police reform group formed in the aftermath of the Ferguson protests. The study, Police Use of Force Policy Analysis, examined police departments in 91 of the nation's largest cities and found that departments with stricter use of force regulations killed significantly fewer people, noting that many police departments fail to establish common sense restrictions on use of force and that police violence is distributed disproportionately, with black people being three times more likely to be killed by police than their white counterparts. The study's authors wrote, "Fundamentally changing use of force policies can dramatically reduce the number of people killed by police in America, which, as you know, speaking for myself, is a crisis." As Jamila King reported in the publication, the online publication Mike, M-I-C, the study is the first wide-scale analysis to demonstrate the connection between differing use of force policies and the rate of police killings. Campaign Zero identified the following eight guidelines restricting when and how police officers should use force that greatly decrease the likelihood of civilian deaths. First, require officers to de-escalate situations before resorting to force. Now, you'd think that that would be common sense. You would think that you would want that. Wouldn't you expect that? Something along the lines of, now, we don't have to go there. Well, no. We've the FBI was a big part of this. Officers have been trained across the nation to essentially escalate situations, to immediately try to be as threatening as they possibly freaking can, often including pulling a deadly weapon. Require officers to de-escalate situations before resorting to force. That's number one. Second, limit the kinds of force that can be used to respond to specific forms of resistance. Limit the kinds of force that can be used to respond to specific forms of resistance. Third, restrict chokeholds. Fourth, require officers to give a verbal warning before using force. Fourth, require officers to give a verbal warning before using force. Fifth, prohibit officers from shooting at moving vehicles. Again, you'd think that would just be obvious. Prohibit officers from shooting at moving vehicles. Sixth, require officers to exhaust all alternatives to deadly force. Seventh, require officers to stop colleagues from exercising excessive force. Maybe we could call that the My Lai rule. Eighth, requiring comprehensive reporting on the use of force. And Campaign Zero found that, on average, each additional use of force policy was associated with at least a 15% reduction in killings, and that implementing all eight guidelines would result in a 54% reduction in killings for the average police department. Taking into account the number of arrests made, assault on officers, and community demographics, Campaign Zero reported that police departments with all eight use of force policies implemented would kill 72% fewer people than departments that have none of these policies in place. 72% fewer. There's more on the article, as I was saying, at projectcensored.org. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Happy New Year. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Talking about the news you're not supposed to know over the past year, and selecting a few of Project Censored's stories. Here's one proposing a comprehensive look at transgender homicide since 2010. Mike's Meredith Talisan investigated in December 2016 how and why trans lives are not counted and what we can do to end the violence. The online publication Mike Report began with a revealing comparison of homicide figures. Among the general U.S. population, 1 in 19,000 people is murdered every year. For young adults aged 15 to 34, the figure is 1 in 12,000. For black trans women in the same age range, the rate is 1 in 2,600. Let me just read that again. Among the general U.S. population, 1 in 19,000 persons is murdered every year. And that's horrible, isn't it? I mean, it's just one of the worst. It's absolutely the worst in the industrialized West. For young adults aged 15 to 34, the figure is 1 in 12,000. For black trans women in the same age range, the rate is 1 in 2,600. In 2015, FBI homicide data counted 15,696 murders. As Mike reported, if in 2015 all Americans had the same risk of murder as young black trans women, there would have been 120,087 murders. Going back to the text, put another way, although the total number of transgender homicides per year may seem small, it represents a rate of violence that far exceeds that of the general population. And in fact, as Talisan's report went on to document, due to underreporting and misidentification, many trans murder victims are misgendered by officials in news reports and even by immediate family members who sometimes reject a relative's trans identity. The actual trans murder rate is likely much higher. The result of the Mike investigation is that is what Talisan described as a comprehensive database of transgender Americans who have died by homicide since 2010. 2010 was the first year the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs, organization that tracks homicides in the transgender community, began its formal count. Once again, more on the article at projectcensored.org. If you see a theme here, it is that the aggression against people of color has many forms and is projected in various ways through the society. Again, turning to Project Censored. Judges across the U.S. are using racially biased software to assess defendants' risk of committing future crimes. A terrifying story. It reads as follows. In 2014, then U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder warned that so-called risk assessments might be injecting bias into the nation's judicial system. As ProPublica reported in May 2016, courtrooms across the country use algorithmically generated scores known as risk assessments to rate a defendant's risk of future crime. And in many states, including Arizona, Colorado, Delaware, Kentucky, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Virginia, Washington, and Wisconsin, to unofficially inform judges' sentencing decisions. The Justice Department's National Institute of Corrections now encourages the use of such assessments at every stage of the criminal justice process. And just speaking for myself, as an aside, you know, this takes place in the context of ongoing bias, recordable, scientifically, statistically precise precisely defined bias against people of color in the injustice system. More arrests, worse charging, more prosecution, and worse sentences. So keep that, hold that in mind for a moment. And I'll return to the text. They write, although Holder called in 2014 for the U.S. Sentencing Commission to study the use of risk scores because they might exacerbate unwarranted and unjust disparities that are already far too common in our criminal justice system, the Sentencing Commission never did so. Julia Angwin, Jeff Larson, Surya Matu, and Lauren Kirshner's article reported the findings of a report by ProPublica to assess Holder's concern. As they write, ProPublica obtained the risk scores assigned to more than 7,000 people arrested in Broward County, Florida in 2013 and 14, and checked to see how many were charged with new crimes over the next 2 years. A ProPublica study was specifically intended to assess whether an algorithm known as COMPASS, or Correctional Offender Management Profiling for Alternative Sanctions, produced accurate prediction results through its assessment of criminogenic needs. How's that for a word? Criminogenic. That relate to the major theories of criminality, including criminal personality, social isolation, substance abuse, and residence instability. Judges across the country are provided with risk ratings based on the COMPASS algorithm or comparable software. Broward County, Florida, the focus of ProPublica's study, does not use risk assessments in sentencing, but it often uses them in pre-trial hearings as part of its efforts to address jail overcrowding. As ProPublica reported, judges in Broward County use risk scores to determine which defendants are sufficiently low risk to be released on bail pending their trials. Based on ProPublica's analysis of the Broward County data, they reported that the risk scores reported produced by the algorithm proved remarkably unreliable in forecasting violent crime. Only 20% of the people predicted to commit violent crimes actually went on to do so. In fact, the algorithm was only somewhat more accurate than a coin toss. The study also found significant racial disparities, as Holder had feared. Quote, the formula was particularly likely to falsely flag black defendants as future criminals, wrongly labeling them this way at almost twice the rate as white defendants, end quote, is from ProPublica. So, again, the story, once again from Project Censored, is that a computer algorithm called COMPAS, COMPASS, is being used to project the racism of its programmers as unbiased algorithmic selection, and is being used by judges across the country, including where I'm broadcasting right now, in part, in Washington State. Hello, Washington State. To increase and institutionalize further the racism inherent in the system. I'd like to point out that the context is just, frankly, police racism, and this also is definable and statistically proven. There is no way around it. White cops are one of the most racist groups in the country, period. That should be terrifying to you. That should be absolutely terrifying. Defendants' prior crimes, they write, or the types of crime for which they were arrested, do not explain this disparity. After running a statistical test that controlled for the effects of criminal history, recidivism, age, and gender, black defendants were still 77% more likely to be identified as a higher risk of committing a future violent crime, and 45% more likely to be predicted to commit a future crime of any kind compared with their white counterparts. This has been shown to be an absolutely bogus program, and its effect is simply projecting the racism of its programmers. We don't know exactly how they pumped their racism into the program because, like the voting machines, this program is proprietary. You can't have a look at it. It's not allowed. It's a corporate secret. And now we have Sessions in power. Jeff Beauregard Sessions. So again, these are pretty scary stories. And that's why I started off with Medea Benjamin pointing out that resistance has been increasing. It's been heartening. And as I said, Christmas Day I thought was just awesome because of the feminine activist. You can find that video on YouTube. Snatching baby Jesus out of the creche was just funny as hell. To see how people are just panicking about it. I mean, it's just a gesture. It's like, I hereby snatch baby Jesus out of the creche. Well, who cares? You know, don't drop it. But you can see people just charging after this woman as She's running towards the activity display. And I'm guessing that English is not her first language because she's yelling, God is a woman. And that phrase will always make me laugh now. And the other hilarious thing was the delivery of a very large package. We're talking a 3 feet high package, gaily wrapped, to Steve Mnuchin's, one of Steve Mnuchin's addresses, that was full of manure. And of course, the metaphor that's being applied there is pretty obvious. And it's good for people to think about just what a parasite Mnuchin and his class are. You've heard the stats before, so I won't repeat them. But this is just the most grotesque maldistribution of wealth ever. And why do we take it? Why do we put up with it? How is it that we got used to seeing our own citizens freeze to death on sidewalks? You know, I wish I had memorized how many people died last year outside just here in the Portland area. You'd be shocked. It looks like you go by the tents, and I did on the way here, as I often do. And it just looks like that would be incredibly harsh. The ice is right next to the tent. Can you imagine sleeping there every night, all night? Do you think you'd be warm? Well, you're not. Do you think you'd survive the flu? Well, a lot of people didn't last year and aren't right now. People are dying. We got used to it post-Reagan, and it's beyond belief. I urge you to feel all the rage that you've been encouraged to bottle up about it. Half of us, probably half of us, are at risk. If we are fired, if we get sick, we break a leg. Half of us, and you know this is true, half of us are at risk of being that next person just trying to put up a tent somewhere, just trying to live. No access to bathrooms. No waste disposal, no access to most, just to the most essential thing in a civilized society, a warm place to sleep. This is Press Watch, and I seem to have the flu today. I thought I was over it, and like a lot of people, when I get even the mildest fever, I find it difficult to think. I was talking earlier also about transgender murders, and specifically about transgender murders of people of color. The long story short there is that transgender women particularly just, they get stabbed and they get blown away. And the details are particularly horrific. The ways in which trans women are killed is particularly brutal. Over and over again, we see that they are killed in great rage, stabbed many, many times, shot many, many times, dumped by the side of the road. And their perpetrators are constantly getting off, getting away with it. I'm calling for an end to that. It is something that affects me, not directly because I'm not a trans woman of color, but you may have been listening to me thinking that you know my gender, and there's two reasons why you might think you know my gender. One is that you've listened to this broadcast before and you know that I'm a trans woman. I transitioned in 2001 at the age of 43. I've been saying that, and I've been promoting transgender rights and transgender life, human rights, all this time. But you may also have thought that you knew my gender because I'm using a baritone voice, the baritone voice that I learned to be an announcer with a long time ago when I started radio back in 1981, when I was at KKAM Lubbock. The music of your life. But I've decided that's the way I'm going to present myself, at least on the air. I'm just going to go ahead and use this voice. And there's a bit of confusion involved with that, and that's okay. I am who I am. I know my gender. And the rage that is projected against trans women is a part of the rage that is projected against women generally. And so this has been another thing about 2017 that I think is worth talking about, the Me Too movement. The renewed effort for women's human rights. Pharmaceutical companies that produce antibiotics are creating dangerous superbugs when their factories leak industrial waste. That's according to Madeline Davies of the Bureau of Investigative Journalism. Superbugs are bacteria that become resistant to antibiotics. Pharmaceutical factories in China and India, the places where the majority of the world's antibiotics are manufactured, are releasing an untreated waste fluid into local soils and waters, leading to increases in antimicrobial resistance that diminish the effectiveness of antibiotics and threaten the foundations of modern medicine. A number of the companies have established links to U.S. markets. Now, speaking for myself, this dovetails with the excessive use of antibiotics in the unbelievably cruel factory farms that we put in the central states of this nation, of the central of the contiguous 48 states here in the U.S. Between the two of them, they are wiping out antibiotics. Again, this is from ProjectCensored.org. They write, after bacteria in the environment become resistant, they can exchange genetic material with other germs, spreading antibiotic resistance around the world, according to an assessment issued by the European Public Health Alliance, which served as the basis for the news report. Davies, the reporter, described a case in which a drug-resistant bacterium that originated in India in 2014 has since been found in 70 other countries. Superbugs resulting from pharmaceutical pollution have already killed an estimated 25,000 people across Europe, thus globally posing as big a threat as terrorism, according to UK National Health Service official, Chief Medical Officer Dame Sally Davies. And again, speaking for myself, you don't hear about that sort of thing because terrorism is politically very useful in manipulating the population to the point that terrorist groups are sometimes formed by governments. Please keep that in mind. But 25,000 people have been killed by super bugs, and you don't hear about it, and it's on Project Censored, as a matter of fact. ProjectCensored.org. In May 2014, they write, Martin Kaur quoted Dr. Keiji Fukuda, who coordinated the World Health Organization's work on antimicrobial resistance between 2010 and 2016. According to Fukuda, a post-antibiotic era in which common infections and minor injuries can kill, far from being an apocalyptic fantasy, is instead a very real possibility for the 21st century, end quote. More on that at ProjectCensored.org. What stories have you followed that you think were not sufficiently covered in 2017. Of course, I think that despite the fact that we are talking about the climate, it hasn't been covered sufficiently. So I have climate stories. But also, there's ongoing stories that we've learned to ignore. I spoke of the capitalist crisis of homelessness, the steady and durable proof of the utter failure of capitalism right there on the streets, right in front of us. The failure of our commonality, the failure of our humanity. Hideous, corrupt failure. There are other stories which we get used to over a while, or which are simply hidden from us. And one of those is the fact that the reactors at Fukushima are still steadily and massively polluting the Pacific Ocean. So this from TheGuardian.com. TEPCO, the company at the center of the Fukushima disaster, has encountered anger over its failure to prevent the catastrophe, at its treatment of tens of thousands of evacuated residents, and its haphazard attempts to clean up its atomic mess. Now the same utility is attempting to banish its Fukushima demons with a push to restart two reactors at Kashiwazaki Kariwa, one of its three nuclear plants. Only then, it says, can it generate the profits it needs to fund the decommissioning of Fukushima Daiichi and win back the public trust it lost in the wake of the meltdown. This week, Japan's Nuclear Regulation Authority gave its formal approval for TEPCO to restart the number 6 and 7 reactors, the same type of boiling water reactors that suffered meltdowns at Fukushima Daiichi. Now, speaking for myself, this is also in the face of news that there are further similarly catastrophic quakes coming for the islands of Japan. After a month of public hearings, the Nuclear Regulation Authority in Japan concluded that TEPCO was fit to run a nuclear power plant and said the two reactors met the stricter safety standards introduced after the 2011 disaster. Just before that decision, TEPCO gave The Guardian an exclusive tour of what it claims will be the safest nuclear plant in the world. And you can read more on that. It's at TheGuardian.com. Search for Fukushima, F-U-K-U-S-H-I-M-A. More Fukushima news. Fire crews finally extinguished Fukushima blaze in the no-go zone, and that was back in May. The forest fire was put out, but it burned for 12 days first in a high radiation zone. The smoke, of course, was radioactive, but the government and TEPCO have been very active in preventing readings of just how radioactive it was. So that's the Fukushima update. The amount of radiation is greater than ever. It flows continually into the bay there and into the Pacific Ocean. It is spreading. Don't be fooled by the fact that a map was used fraudulently. It is spreading. And it is having its effect on wildlife, and it's ongoing and worsening. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Go to the next caller. Jeff, you're on the air.
Yeah, Teresa, I just wanted to thank you for years and years of doing good programs, and I don't think I've ever called in before, but a long-time listener. Anyways, many of the topics that you're talking about are terrific today, and the antibiotics thing is almost tough for everybody to avoid, because whenever you eat fast food, most of those animals have been raised with antibiotics. You know, when you buy most foods at your local grocery store, most of those foods, you know, those animals and things have been fed, various grains and things and given antibiotics so they can pack more animals into a smaller area. So when we, you know, try to eat locally and more sustainably, it helps a lot of things. And you know, there's no Atlantic salmon that I know of that are grown without hormones and antibiotics. So just, you know, something to ponder. But, you know, many of the topics you're talking about are terrific, and glad you're there.
Well, thank you very much for that. I appreciate that. You know, what it puts me in mind of is we also need to think of, and I'll go to the next caller in just a moment, we also need to work on our various forms of resistance. And one of the themes that has followed through the program here is the problem that we have with the police and the courts, namely the racism of the police and the courts. And there is a way that you, if you happen to be a white person, there is a way that you can deal with it. It's not that people of color can't also deal with it, but here's the thing. You have privilege. When you go into a jury pool, you have privilege. And because of the hegemony of whiteness, you are considered normal, predictable, trustworthy. This, of course, is false. And I encourage you not to be within that context. And here's how it would work. Here's how it does work. It's called jury nullification. I encourage you to look that up. Jury nullification. At the core, it is simply the right of you to say no when you see that things are going wrong. And when you get into the courts, you're told this and you're told that, and you're told you can do this and you can do that, but you need to inform yourself before you ever go into the jury pool. And this will be a reason for many of you to actively seek jury service instead of dodging it. You need to inform yourself about jury nullification before you go into the jury pool, and you need to act morally. And not worry. Don't be afraid about what that prosecutor says or what you can and can't do. You won't be prosecuted for your decision. You won't be prosecuted for your decision in the jury. In Oregon, this sort of thing has come up before. Started being effective, frightened the powers that be. They saw that people of color were getting off because someone on the jury, this was just terrifying to them, had a conscience and would shut the whole thing down with a no vote. And so they took action, and now you have to recruit someone else in Oregon to stop racism. You have to have at least two no votes to stop a prosecution that you know is in some way wrong. And let me point out, I've talked about the disparities. These are the words that conservatives cannot hear. They cannot hear the word disparity. They cannot hear the word disproportionate, because they know that is where their guilt lies. But you can see it. And when you are in a situation where you know that the charge is excessive, the sentence is likely to be excessive, the charge is not proven, there are mitigating circumstances, the prosecutor will try to tell you over and over and over that everything the cops say is absolutely verifiable. There will be great pressure on you to believe that. Don't. Cops lie. And you can shut it down if you see a person of color or another oppressed group being treated partly in the frame of their oppression. It is better to let someone off for a crime than to make a criminal of the society. It is better to miss the opportunity to punish than to punish a person outrageously or falsely, and you can say no. That's jury nullification. Look it up. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. And go to the next caller. Hi, Laurie. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Teresa. This may not be the biggest story, but it concerns me. I used to be able to recycle miscellaneous plastics at Flawless Fibers, and they are no longer taking those plastics because they lost their contract with China because China's not taking our plastics. So it just concerns me that we're throwing more and more plastic away, and it's hurting our planet, hurting our mother. And anyway, it's a concern of mine, and I don't know if there's a solution or answer to why can't we, United States, maybe do what China did and somehow recycle all this miscellaneous plastics garbage that they used to, they don't take it anymore.
I'm really glad that you brought that up.
It really is upsetting because I'm throwing all this plastic away I used to be able to recycle, and it's, wow, more and more plastic on the planet. Jeez.
Well, I have some things to say. I have been following that, and I have some things to say about it. First, it is a big story, and I'm glad you brought it up, and thank you. And it's temporary because another country will pick up what China doesn't want to do at this point. There are other countries where the wages are low enough that it attracts the investment and the profit yearning of the great parasites here in the United States and internationally. And so that will happen, and another country will start dealing with the pollution and the oppression of trying to recycle the United States waste. There are so many aspects to this. There is the excessive packaging, which is only getting worse. The excessive production of plastic, mostly for packaging. There's also the fact that China's power is increasing at an incredible rate. And I personally have been testing this myself. This isn't entirely a bad thing. It's just that Americans are not in control of it, which is kind of interesting and new. But especially with Trump threatening war and with the finance-based teetering system here in the U.S., there's a good chance that we're going to hear a lot more about the Chinese yuan soon, because there are efforts, and actually Pepe Escobar has got something on this. I hope we got his first name right. Escobar, in any case. You can find it on Counterpunch. Things could change rapidly. The economy could get worse very rapidly sometime in the coming year. Thanks so much for calling in with that information. Oh, you're gone. Okay. So we'll go to the next caller. Number to call is 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. This is Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. We're talking about the news you're not supposed to know over the past year. Stories that you would like to see covered that were not sufficiently or perhaps not covered at all. And Karen's next.
Hi, Teresa. Thank you for a wonderful program today. I just wanted to get your take on forest fire prevention at a micro level, because at a macro level, it's so complicated to talk about, and we all know that. So I'm really not up on this issue, and I wanted to understand how we could protect our parks better, our gorge better, our, you know.
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because I do have a relatively quick answer, and that is stop the timber industry.
Oh, great.
Stop them. And let me explain how that works.
Okay.
Timber industry goes in and they, quote, thin an area. They leave 200 tons of slash in an area when they clear cut, and something similar to that when they thin an area. That slash, they use their tracked and wheeled equipment, and they cut the mycelial mat into pieces. They remove the overstory, in other words, the trees that were keeping that mat moist.
Yeah,
it dries out. The mycelium dies back. Other trees die because the mycelium has died back. Things get browner and drier and deader And then it catches fire in a really ferocious way. So that is a major thing that can be done to cut back on, I mean, in old growth forest, it is adapted to fire. And the fires are slower and cooler and damper. And when a slope has been cut, so many things happen to it. It can slide for one thing, but it dries out. And
Thank you, Teresa. That is a really clear and very good answer. Thank you so much. You have a wonderful day, and I hope you get over your cold.
Thanks. I'll be glad to get over it, too. Yeah, pretty mild right now, but I'm one of those people that's like, you give me the least bit of fever, and I'm just derf. I'm scarcely here. So thank you all for calling in with your comments and questions, because I need it today. Once again, before I go to the next caller, and y'all, what is it about talk shows? Y'all, I'll call in at the end of the hour. Bless you. You can do that if you want. Once again, we're almost at the end of the year. Go to kboo.fm and divert some money from the Trump administration. You know what I mean. Give us a donation. Even if you're not wealthy, you can donate $50, take it off your taxes. Oh, yes, you can. And others of you can donate quite a bit more. And also, the Fuzzy Boo needs another sound system. We have the engineers here who can install it, no problem. But maybe you can provide one and would like the tax deduction that would go with that. Call us at 503-231-8032 for that and say you want to make a donation. We'll take it from there. Now, the other number for the last caller or so, as we approach the top of the hour, is 503-231-8187. I said that too quickly. I know, but we're almost out of time, and so we'll go to the last caller here. Laura, you get the last word.
Hi, Teresa. Good morning. Thank you for being here. And I'm always so grateful that you bring up Fukushima and Hanford. And I don't know if people are aware of this. Generally, Portland sort of checked out in terms of Hanford, which I think is a grave mistake. But they had some problems while they were decommissioning the plutonium filtering plant. A lot of dust got free, and it blew around, and workers were exposed, and some went home with plutonium on their trucks. I know it sounds crazy.
Well, it's not crazy. It's been going on for all these years.
Right. Yeah, it's just this notion that, you know, it stays right there on the reservation.
Oh, which is so absurd and so provable otherwise.
I know. And so this is on Heart of America Northwest, if anybody wants to read more about this. But I think it's a good look at how this, you know, impacts us. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that Dirk Dunning, who was a chemical engineer at Oregon Department of Energy and a strong Columbia River activist and Hanford expert, actually, he sadly retired recently. And an interview with him is in one of the recent Columbia River Keeper newsletters. And he talks about a risk that I think people should know about, and it comes from the cesium and strontium capsules that are stored in the waste encapsulation storage facility on site, kind of, I think it's towards the entrance of Hanford.
I'm really sorry to cut you off, but we are out of time and the music's coming up.
Oh,
so
darn.
Thanks for that information.
Well,
Columbia River
out.
Keeper. All right. Thank you so much for calling in. Well, I guess I will say something about that just at the last second here, and that is, you know, you're talking to a nuclear apologist when they bring up the bogus and disprovable, easily disprovable, banana argument, the problem with nuclear radiation, mostly, unless you're in the way of a bomb, is the fact that it gets in your body and keeps irradiating and replaces healthy tissues with irradiated tissues and causes cancer in that manner. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM in Cascadia, other frequencies elsewhere, and KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
KBOO is in this year's Willamette Week Give Guide. KBOO has inspired and supported communities for nearly 50 years. You were an important part of this work, and your gift to KBOO builds fiercely just, creative, and independent radio. Join your friends and neighbors in supporting KBOO in the Give Guide. It's easy and secure. Help us make our $18,000 goal before December 31st. Go to the giveguide.org website and find KBOO in the Creative Expression section. And as always, thank you for your support of KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Rocker T and the 7th Street Band on Saturday, January 6th, beginning at 9 p.m. at Mississippi Studios in Portland. Rocker T is from Brooklyn and has 7 albums released by a number of labels playing reggae and reggaeton. Also performing will be